The governor attempts a power grab, how he wants to limit the authority of Glenda Ritz. New questions about the investigation into Tony Bennett, a changing field in the race for mayor of Indianapolis, and the state joins an immigration lawsuit. That plus an upgrade for holiday decorations at the State House, a new book about Mitch in 2012, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 5, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Governor Mike Pence announced plans to change the way the chairman of the State Board of Education is chosen. It's a move aimed at taking power away from Democratic State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz. The Republican governor announced his proposal at a legislative conference in the convention center. Pence said he would issue an executive order to dissolve the Center for Education and Career Innovation, an agency that was viewed as a shadow for the Department of Education. Then he will seek legislation that would allow the Board of Education to elect its chairman. Currently, that post automatically goes to the state superintendent.
It's time to take politics out of education in Indiana, or at least out of the State Board of Education.
I just thought it was important that someone take the first step to restore trust, to restore harmony at the highest levels of education in Indiana. We've simply got to get the State Board of Education working.
Is this a power play by the governor? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger, President of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, will the governor get his way?
First of all, your original question was, is it a power grab? Is that an IQ test or what? I mean, when he gets up there and says he wants to take politics out of the State Board of Education, he must be practicing a comedy routine for a stand-up comedian. I mean, it's ridiculous. He wants to take the only official elected statewide to lead in education, take the power away from her, and give it to his cronies. That's what he wants to do, and he thinks that takes politics out of it. I think even for the Republican-dominated legislature, this would be too much to swallow.
Well, will it? I mean, supermajority's there.
I think everyone agrees something has to change.
I think changing that office from elected to appointed is too much for them to swallow, but is changing the leadership of the Board of Ed?
Well, most people think it's dysfunctional at best, broken probably, and something needed to change. So the governor, to his credit, took a big step forward and said, let me erase some of this confusion. You had angst and didn't like this agency that was created. Let me dissolve that. Let me take that off the table. And let's try something different here. This board consists of Republicans and Democrats.
The board.
Yes, and he took it off the table. No more blaming. He created the agency, not the board.
He created the CECI.
Right.
That was an effort to work around Glenda Ritz. It didn't work.
It was an effort to get things done.
But he's now got a new effort to work around Glenda Ritz.
Through the board, which she and every other superintendent thereafter will be a part of. Remember, that board consists of Republicans and Democrats spread across the whole state
of
Indiana.
They're all his cronies.
Right. And she has said, her words were, I have no problem with the board. She said she had a problem with the agency, so that's gone. No more blaming the agency.
Yeah, she did, but about a year ago, she thought this was going to be part of his legislative agenda, and she questioned it then. She had a problem with it then, and the governor's press secretary 1 year ago called it ridiculous and said that the governor quashed the idea as soon as it was brought to him.
Yep. flatly denied it, and then a year later proposed it as a major plank of his legislative agenda. And let me be clear, I mean, it sounds like a really big change, but from a practical standpoint of how that board runs now, they've changed all the rules so that they can overrule whatever she does as chair anyway. So there is some argument to be made that other than the bully pulpit position, it won't really be a major impact for her not to chair it, because they already changed who sets the agenda, who can put stuff on the agenda. They made it so they could overrule findings she has. But
they still can't get through a three-hour agenda in less than 8 hours.
Hopefully that'll change.
Well, no, I think that this is a savvy political move by the governor, because, as Eric said, he created this organization and now he's taking it away. But it does take away that bully pulpit. It diminishes that role by making it appointed, assuming that that gets through. And the legislature is inclined to do this. They were not happy about CECI. This takes it away, makes them happier. And so they probably will pass that.
Taking away CECI is a carrot followed by a really big stick.
Yeah, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to shut down anybody who has anything to say about the fact that he's trying to dismantle public education. That's exactly what his agenda has been since the day he's been in office. And Glenda Ritz is standing up for public education. They don't like it, and they're trying any way they can to get around the fact that, by the way, she was elected with more votes than he had.
Okay, but he is the governor, and she's not. And isn't there an argument to be made for using your power if you can?
She's still going to have a voice on this board. That's the key part.
Well,
and she has claimed she can work with these. And she'll have a voice. Now, she used that voice to campaign for candidates all across the state in this recent election.
And he didn't?
And the General Assembly elected more Republicans. So we have an agenda that we want to put forward.
I see. The national tidal wave was Glenda Ritz's fault.
No, okay. These came down to districts.
Oh, no. It came down to a national title.
You won a few, didn't you?
And your gerrymandered districts. That's what it came down to.
All right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the chairman of the State Board of Education be elected by the board? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, can the BMV be fixed? 65% said yes, 24% said no, 11% said only temporarily. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The state inspector general says he did deliver all the evidence gathered in an investigation of former State Superintendent Tony Bennett to the Marion County prosecutor. The State Ethics Commission fined Bennett $5,000 for actions during the campaign in 2012. Last summer, Prosecutor Terry Curry opted not to charge Bennett with a crime, but this week, the Associated Press reported that David Thomas had more evidence than he initially presented to the prosecutor, 12 binders worth. Prosecutor Terry Curry says he received only one binder.
If we're making a judgment, which we're asked to do as to whether there's any criminal conduct, clearly we should have had access to that information also. Yeah. Clearly we needed to have the complete information, complete story, in order to make a reasoned judgment.
Eric Holcomb, what's going on here?
Well, I only know what I read, and that's all we're presented. And what I see in this is the inspector general did, in fact, forward these 12 binders, as you pointed out, to the county prosecutor, to the district attorney. Where those binders are now, I don't know, which causes a little bit of concern. But they also got a receipt confirming that the prosecutor had received those. So I don't know if they chose not to look at the information that they received and acknowledged that they did.
Well, they're both Democrats. It was Joe Hogsett in the U.S. attorney's position when this information was handed over. Terry Curry was running for re-election. Were they afraid to take on a Republican elected official?
I don't think so. And I don't know where the binders are either, because I only know what I read. But the fact of the matter is that the Tom Sawyer of state government, the inspector general who whitewashes everything, put out a public statement saying, slap on the hand, don't do it again, but no big deal. Here's a $5,000 fine. Go away. Okay? The fact of the matter is, he's still entitled to a presumption of innocence, not you, but Bennett, to a presumption of innocence, presumption of innocence on all of these.
Right.
These are only allegations.
Right.
But these allegations of serial ghost employment are much more involved and much more detailed than what a predecessor in his office was convicted and incarcerated for, if I recall correctly, and another statewide official convicted and disbarred for.
Yeah.
So the fact of the matter is, first of all, the statute of limitations hasn't run on this, so this can still be investigated. But the fact of the matter is, the public perception of what happened there, because you have a crony of the governor investigating other cronies of the governor without subpoena power.
But
the inspector general ought to be abolished.
Well, that makes it interesting. But tell me this: the inspector general David Thomas is about to leave the position. We all of a sudden see this information. Is this him trying to justify the job he did?
Oh, I'd be surprised if that was the case. If he was the person who provided the information that was published this week, I'd be very surprised. I also am surprised. You know, this report was apparently dated in February, and it wasn't until July when the inspector general did anything about this. So there was a long time where a lot of people apparently knew that there was some very serious allegations made in this report, and very little was done about it. And the other thing that I find very interesting in all of this, you mentioned the cases before involving Dr. Negley, and I can't think of who the other one was, but that there was a more recent case that was included in this investigation, apparently, that included a person in Lake County who was found, who pleaded guilty to six charges under the very similar circumstances. So it was almost as if there was a blueprint for this for the prosecutors, and apparently they chose either to ignore it or didn't realize it.
I mean, I think it's clear now that the inspector general did not whitewash it. It looks to me, when you look at the details in that 95-page report, they looked at everything. They were pulling gas card receipts to see if it matched up to mileage books, and they sent it to not one but two Democrats, and neither of them did anything.
So if somebody pursues it now, would it be double jeopardy?
No.
An ethical violation is way different. And while it sounds like a slap on the wrist for the $5,000 fine, there weren't many other options for the Ethics Commission
to do. That's why you don't let an appointed person without subpoena power do criminal investigations. That's why this whole system is fraught with all kinds of problems. If you're the prosecutor doing this, you get in that investigation from the beginning. You use your subpoena power. You don't let statements get down in writing without the ability to cross-examine.
But the prosecutors took a hands-off position.
The investigation was done before the prosecutors ever got it. That's the problem.
But the same thing as when police investigation.
This inspector general has the benefit of having been a county prosecutor himself, so he knows what Prosecutor Curry deals with and the magnitude of the scope of the office. Mm-hmm. But what we do know, the facts are that he did send 12 binders and then resent 12 more binders. I wonder if we'll ever know where those 12 binders are now.
Where the 12 binders are. The statement
it
he
does
put
now,
out,
but it didn't when
the
they were
statement
sent?
He put out downplayed what he saw in those 12 binders that he had. It downplayed it as not significant.
He could have released at the time he released the report when he said
done it all.
He could have released that to the public and chose not to.
And he didn't do it. What he did is put the best spin on it he could.
I think there are plenty of questions to ask, and I also think we haven't heard the last of this.
Probably right.
Reverend Charles Harrison, the pastor of Barnes United Methodist Church and leader of the 10-Point Coalition, filed an exploratory committee to run for mayor of Indianapolis this week. He says he has not decided whether he'll run as a Democrat or a Republican, but he's considering both options.
We need to make sure that everyone benefits in this city in the success of Indianapolis, and we need to make sure all of our neighborhoods are experiencing economic development, and that everyone who wants to be employed at least has that opportunity for equal employment.
In light of the fact that I'm going to be on the Ways and Means Committee, I will be dropping out of the mayor's race. I'm reluctant to do it. I want to be mayor. I think it's an important office. But I think I can do more for the city at the State House right now, and that's what I'm going to do.
And that's Democrat Ed Delaney, who exited the race this week. By the way, Charles Harrison also said that he might run as a Libertarian or an Independent. John Ketzenberger, what does this mean for Joe Hogsett?
Well, I think it, on the one hand, with Ed Delaney's departure, that clears the path for him on the Democrat side. I don't see any other candidates coming up.
Could be Harrison.
I understand that, but the person who signed the papers for his exploratory committee ran for the city council as a Republican, so there's some tipping of the hand there. There's no question that Reverend Harrison is sounding like he wants to be a mayoral candidate, and if he decides to run, then, you know, good for him. But I'll be surprised if he runs as a Democrat, and if he runs as an Independent or a Libertarian, he won't have a role in the race.
Could he, if he ran as an Independent, siphon votes away from Joe Hogsett or Democrat?
I mean, he could if he had any sort of fundraising and you know, platform. That would take a lot. I mean, right now at this point, if some well-established Republican doesn't step up, I mean, I think this is, you know, Joe Hogsett's to lose. And
I think you're right. And will it, the question is, will a Republican step up?
Yes, yes. And the folks that wear my jersey will coalesce around that candidate. As I understood it, Reverend Harrison was contemplating running as a Democrat or an independent. And if he won't,
what he said yesterday was, I've been approached by Republicans, I've been approached by Democrats, I've been approached by independents, and I've been approached by Libertarians, and I'm going to leave it open.
I'm taking the good Reverend at his word. He said his role, he alluded to, was to have his voice included in this conversation. And if that's the case, he would probably be well served running as an independent, because he would ensure himself and his voice to be part of this discussion throughout the, not just primary, but a general election as well.
Okay, so Ann Delaney is here, who is both the spouse and a political advisor to Ed Delaney.
Oh, I don't know about that.
As he exited the race, he declined, at least at this point, to endorse Joe Hogsett.
Well, I think what Ed's agenda has always been is concern for the city in central Indiana. And he wants the issues to be discussed, and he wants them to be fully discussed. And he'll discuss them with Joe Hogsett and any other candidate out there, including the incumbent mayor. To see what he can do from the legislative perspective to make our city great. And I think that's good. And I, for one, am glad it's in the legislature.
Might there be an endorsement forthcoming?
You know, who knows what happens.
Indiana has joined a 17-state coalition this week suing to reverse President Obama's executive order on immigration. It was done at the direction of Governor Mike Pence.
To have the President of the United States unilaterally act is not consistent with our laws or tradition or our constitutional framework. And I thought it was important for the state of Indiana to stand with other states around the country on that principle.
Nikki Kelly, is that a good use of state taxpayer dollars?
I guess that'll be for the voters to say. I mean, I think the insider baseball part of this is that he directed Attorney General Greg Zeller to file the suit, and Attorney General Greg Zeller came back and said, well, I'm not going to file it, but I'm going to let you hire your own people
outside
to file
counsel.
It. And what that means is Governor Pence now has to come up with that money in his own budget. And I'm sure he'll be able to find it. But, you know, he has to justify that within his own budget now.
What's he doing here? Is this? I mean, a lot of people think he's playing to a Republican primary audience.
A lot of people would be right. A lot of people would be right about that. This is a Quixotian effort here, and he's not alone. I mean, other than the 17 states, we have Congress, or the Republicans in Congress, and other folks who are upset with the way the president has handled the immigration issue. I think we've talked about this before. The way to handle it is to deal with it in Congress, and it hasn't been dealt with for a variety of reasons. I think, the governor has decided that this is important to him. He wants to pursue this, and we're going to make sure Indiana is on the list of plaintiffs in the case. I think Nikki's right. He's going to have to justify this, and I think by his calculation, he thinks he's okay by that. We'll wait and see.
Will it be expensive?
Oh, okay. He's hired Barnes and Thornburg. You can guarantee it'll be expensive. But, you know, the irony of this is he's faulting Congress for not doing its job and the president for exceeding his authority. And what is he doing to Glenda Ritz?
Well,
He's going to the legislature. He didn't with the executive order, did he, last year? When he created that first body, he didn't go to the legislature, did he, Jimmy?
He is going to the legislature this time.
Yeah, wow.
This president is famous for, after he won election the first time, saying elections have consequences. And I think he believes that applies to everyone but himself. Because after he refused, the president talked about how important this immigration reform was, but backed off of it until after this election, and then overstepped his presidential powers. And, as was stated earlier, the Congress wants and should be part of this decision. And that's why this governor and many others around the country have said, enough is enough. We have to stand up.
You worked for Senator Coates, and he applauded this.
Yes, because Senator Coates' voice was cut out of this whole executive action. I'm not surprised.
It's not cut out, though, Eric.
It's
silent. It doesn't take effect.
They vote
this
on
doesn't
like this.
Take effect for months. If Congress would get up off their posteriors and do what they were elected to do, they can pass that legislation before this takes effect. Instead of wringing their hands about executive authority, go do what you're supposed to do.
Just remember Schoolhouse Rock. There's a bill on the Hill, not executive decisions on the Hill.
Then put the bill on the Hill.
Check out, go online and check out the Saturday Night Live version of that. Holiday decorations at the State House are getting an upgrade this year. They are highlighted by a large wreath that hangs in the rotunda. Private donations were used to pay for it. Seven trees are part of a display put together by professional decorators. It's a project spearheaded by First Lady Karen Pence. She borrowed ideas from other state houses around the country at the suggestion of former State Senator Richard Young. Gone is the 30-foot tree that was decorated by school children in the past. It was only partially decorated last year.
That was a problem. The ornaments went up about 4 feet and then nothing was at the top.
The main tree, which is a 12-foot tree, includes ornaments that are being donated from county historians across the state. So it'll have kind of a historical component to it.
And that state archivist, Jim Corridan, and Delaney, has changed a good thing in this case.
Oh, I think it looks beautiful. I think she ought to get all the credit in the world for doing change. I mean, the purpose is to make it attractive and to also celebrate the season, and it looks like she's done that in spades, so great.
And while school kids made ornaments that hung on the trees in the past, they brought in a bunch of school kids today who made their own ornaments and then took them home.
Yes. Some made of twigs from the governor's residence so they could take them back from their home to theirs, which is special. I mean, it's just a new way, as Ann said, to express your holiday spirit. And if it attracts new folks to their state house, all the better.
The suggestion, you know, Mrs. Pence didn't say that, but others will, that things look tacky in the past.
I wouldn't use the word tacky. I will say that the quality of tree at that size was getting to be a problem in recent years. I think they were having trouble finding, like, good full trees. You had big ones with huge holes, and so, and then the ornament thing where they were all over with, and there were no lights, nothing on the top of it.
The Department of Administration wouldn't let them put lights on it in the middle of the rotunda. The seven trees they have now are on the outside, and they have lights. Holiday decorations.
How can you find something controversial about this?
Well, does it matter?
Well, ultimately, it does not matter because it is, you know, you have the school children still involved. Part of its charm was that the ornaments went up about 6 feet, and then you had 24 feet left bare, and, you know, that was kind of fun, a little Charlie Brownish, but, you know, it is beautiful, and it's well done, and so why don't we move on?
Thank you for helping the moderator.
You're
just
welcome.
In time for the holidays. We're sticking with the theme here. There's a new book out that spells out the decision-making process that Mitch Daniels went through as he considered a run for president in 2012. Run, Mitch, Run was written by Don Cogman, a longtime friend of the former governor. Cogman was one of eight people who served as advisors to Daniel as he looked at a bid for the GOP nomination. Cogman says family concerns kept Daniels from running and possibly winning.
He really did have a chance. I'm not sure people in Indiana maybe understood the national momentum that was happening at the time, but he really did have an opportunity, and, you know, we would have liked to have seen how that would come out.
Eric Holcomb, you were one of the eight people in that inner circle. Are you giving this book out for Christmas?
And don't rush out and buy one. I have to wrap it.
Can I borrow your dog-eared copy?
Yes. It was a special time and an interesting ride, but I think the breadth and depth of support and encouragement that was out there was pretty incredible. But at the end of the day, there's one constituency that's the most important. And as they say, a happy wife is a happy life. And so he made the right decision.
She had the veto power.
She always had the veto.
Is there, going back, couple years later, is there much to be learned here, do you think?
No, regardless of whether you think he would have made a good president, I think the way the Republican rules are structured now makes the nominating process for somebody like him, who is not as far to the right as a good part of the Republican Party is now, makes the nominating process much more difficult. And until those rules change, it's unrealistic to have somebody who isn't from the far right as a Republican nominee.
I haven't had a chance to read this book yet, but Don Cogman will tell you that you have. You
say, I read it. The thing is fascinating. I read it in a weekend. From my perspective, especially, it was interesting because every moment in it, you know, I was there as the reporter asking those questions, and it was interesting to see how the answers changed. It was interesting how things they told us were not accurate. It was interesting to see what things were being hidden. I mean, there might as well have been a pre-campaign already done. They had campaign managers picked out. They had, you know, it was very, very detailed, and it was shocking to come from the other side and realize
and
that.
And see, that's the thing that is of value to this book, is for all of us who are interested in the process behind the political decisions that are made or not made, we'll probably find a lot to enjoy in this book. So, Eric, you know, if you want to add me to your list,
sure,
that'd be great.
Sure.
But, you know,
it's $3.99 on Kindle.
Okay. But I do think it's interesting because, I don't know, $3.99 is kind of high. I do think that, you know, there were, I mean, they obviously had to be that far down the road if it was that kind of a serious decision and the veto was made. It had to have been a very serious question.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.